Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Independent Coronavirus Podcast. I'm Chloe Hubbard, Executive Editor at The Independent. This podcast is about getting behind the headlines with some of our team, drilling down into the issues we're all experiencing as we try to navigate how to live, work, and stay sane during this COVID-19 pandemic. Today, I'm joined by Harriet Hall, The Independent's lifestyle editor. We're focusing on fashion in isolation, the most popular stories with our readers on our website's lifestyle section, and the sad subject of wedding cancellations. Harriet, you wrote a very funny column about why what you wear during self-isolation matters. You open with a famous quote about sweatpants being a sign of defeat.
Yeah, so the late Karl Lagerfeld once famously said that sweatpants are a sign of defeat. He said, you lost control of your life, so you bought some sweatpants. And I absolutely love that quote. But I would hasten to suggest that perhaps Lagerfeld never had to self-isolate through a pandemic. I would say in times of global crisis, loungewear is what will get us through. You know, I think at the moment we want to be swaddled by our clothes, strike that balance between comfort and that sort of not, I've completely given up all hope aesthetic. I think loungewear, which is essentially that sort of sleepwear, daywear hybrid, clothes that are designed to be worn at home, but that you wouldn't be ashamed of, you know, answering the door to the postman wearing, are what everyone is mostly going to be wearing during this time. But of course, sweatpants have long been a bete noire for many, many people in the fashion industry.
We've all heard the dress smart, act smart analogy, but there is actually scientific research which points to it being better for us to not lounge about in our pajamas all day. Also, we're all on a video call right now. I talk to the editor on a video call several times a day. I'm sure you talk to your team on video chat too, Harriet. Now, while I do confess I have descended into wearing what I like to call a formal jogger, I've tried to maintain a professional look. What does the research tell us about the importance of this?
Yeah, absolutely. We've all been doing video chats, and I think Zoom conferencing has possibly crept up on everyone, unsuspecting. Hoping that they'd be wearing pajamas during this time of remote working and self-isolation, but it's sort of scuppered that fruit for many people. But yeah, I think the idea of a kind of ritual of getting ready for work in the way that you dress is really important, especially now while we're unable to actually leave the house at least more than once a day. And there have been numerous studies that have explored this connection between clothing and productivity, and likewise, uniform and people's willingness to obey orders, the sort of psychological power of clothes, as it were. One 2014 study, for example, looked at men wearing formal and informal clothes and found that when men wore formal clothes in this particular study, they actually behaved in a more dominant way, had higher testosterone levels even in their blood, and actually secured more profitable business deals than those who wore informal clothes. Other studies have looked at how people behave in tests based on what they're wearing. A 2015 one, for example, found that participants performed better in cognitive tests when wearing smart clothes. than those in casual garb. And I think it always reminds me of when, I don't know about you, Chloe, but the teachers at my school used to make us wear our school uniform to do our exams. And I know in Oxbridge, they make the students wear full academic dress for exams as well. So I think there's a definite connection there. It puts you in the mindset of, you know, I'm ready to work now. I'm not just kind of lounging around on the sofa. I actually once read something, I can't remember where, but I remember reading something about somebody who said, always put a pair of shoes on before you start working if you work from home. I don't know if that particular piece of advice was based on any specific science, but it's something that I've picked up and I do, and I tend to work from home even before this time now and again, and actually I do always put shoes on because it's one of those weird things that's really stuck with me, and it does help you just change your mentality so you're not kind of shuffling around in pajamas. I think
no, I'm completely with you. Whenever I've had sort of interviews over Skype or whatever over the years, I've always actually, and I'm not really a heel wearer in the newsroom, but I actually put heels on for a video call because I find it makes me sit slightly differently. So yeah, it definitely does something.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it does. So in the column you talk about developing your quarantine chic. What does that look like for you?
Yes, I'm sure this is a very unpolitically correct term to use, but I think we need something to sort of lift the spirits at the moment. You know, clothes also have this direct impact on our mental well-being. So-called enclosed cognition is a theory that really suggests the way that we dress has a direct impact on our mood as well as our kind of professional behaviour. So if we wear something we perceive to be uplifting, it can lift our spirits. That's not to say, you know, we all find the same types of clothes uplifting or positive. But for me, I think it's all about avoiding wallowing, finding joy in clothes. As the lifestyle editor in a newsroom, I already teeter dangerously close to the acceptable sartorial edge. But working from home, I've started to have a little bit more fun. Quarantine chic, as I call it, I think is about striking a real balance between kind of versatile, crease-free fabrics. You know, you don't want to be wasting your mornings with ironing. And people always talk about this sort of day-to-night aesthetic in fashion magazines. And I think the kind of quarantine chic is more of a desk to couch to jog around the park for 5 minutes on your sort of once a day constitutional aesthetic. So that's what I'm going for. I think mostly for me, it's day-to-day. I'm very much, the way that I dress is very driven by my mood. I am avoiding my usual kind of high-waist trousers, no shoes that pinch. I'm not doing kind of starched shirts and all of that, but I am trying to have a bit of fun, wearing kind of looser, more comfortable clothing. I think that is the real key. I think also, you know, you want to be able to hop on a FaceTime with your boss and not look like you're an absolute, you know, waste of space. I think you want to look like you've got your stuff together. And, you know, if you're going to take your outfit straight away out and about for your once a day walk, you want to be able to sprint away from anyone that is not abiding by the 2 meter social distancing rules. So trainers, I think.
Yeah, they're key, definitely. So aside from what we wear, I was talking to the editor yesterday and he's wondering when he is next going to be able to visit the barbers. Christian, as I'm sure you probably know, has a good head of hair on him. So he could quite quickly start to look a bit Ross Poldark without a trip to the barbers. What should he do, Harry?
Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. This week I have already shaved my partner's head. We're just 2 weeks into remote working and the desperation for haircuts has begun. I feel very smug that I did sprint to the hairdressers before the lockdown, because I'm a sort of very short peroxide hair that needs a lot of kind of regular trims. So I think number one, get yourself a great pair of clippers if you're a man. If you can secure a slot on Amazon, those are a really useful thing to have anyway, long after this ends, whenever that may be. I think for women as well, a deep conditioner is quite a good idea, because personally with long hair, I would avoid trying to cut it yourself unless you've got a very simple hairdo and you've got someone that you're living with who can help you with that. So to avoid those kind of split ends, I would say deep conditioner, whack it on, or just whack on your normal conditioner if you don't have a deep conditioner, and wrap a sort of cellophane. It sounds really weird, but wrap cellophane around your head. It keeps the sort of heat in, and go to sleep like that. And then wake up the next day, and that's a bit of a sort of do-it-yourself deep condition. I think also, like, if we are going to have a bit more fun working from home with our clothes and kind of trying to become, I plan to become very eccentric sartorially by the end of this. So, you know, I've got some sort of leftover pink hair dye from when I used to dye my hair pink. So maybe I'll even do that, but perhaps that's not one for Christian.
I'm really looking forward to seeing your full descent into Adina Monsoon, Harry. This is
any day now.
I live for this. Yeah, my hairdresser actually made a point of contacting me on Instagram and telling me not to touch my hair because I think she must realise that I probably really want it cut. So I'm probably going to just leave mine alone and go full Florence and the Machine. The other thing I was wondering about is like waxing. I'm a bit worried my eyebrows are going to begin to sort of take over my face and I'm going to end up looking like Teen Wolf. Should we leave them alone and hope for the best? What are you going to do about that?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny, all these beauty regimes and things, you don't actually realise until you can't access them how much we rely on them. Like, I think as much as I like to think I'm sort of sticking it to the patriarchy on a daily basis, I'm fully immersed in a kind of strict, regular, you know, manicures or, you know, lash tints or what have you. And once that goes away, you think, oh goodness, I wish I'd done all this before. You know, I think some home grooming is quite a nice and positive way to spend a couple of hours. It's quite sort of nurturing mentally. We've noticed on Indie Best, a lot of people have been really enjoying our article on at-home gel manicure kits. So that kind of thing's really nice. I think when it comes to eyebrows, though, I'm very much of the mindset, best left alone. It is a professional thing. You can just grab one hair and then minutes down the line you look like you're in some sort of 90s girl band with absolute pencil brows. Do not want that look. One thing I'm also really enjoying is not wearing makeup, actually. And I tend to wear makeup really as and when I choose. I don't wear it obsessively every day. I'm kind of, it depends how late I'm running for work or whether I've managed to get a seat on the tube, but I'm quite enjoying not wearing it. And I think actually people's skin will really benefit from perhaps not from extreme lack of vitamin D, but at least from lack of foundation.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Beyond trying not to descend into the joggers of woe, you've obviously been pretty busy keeping our readers informed about all the latest COVID-19 advice. What have been the most popular stories with our audience?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting time for everyone across the newsroom. I think all journalists, whatever their beat, you know, unable to avoid COVID-19 as with the rest of the population. On lifestyle in particular, we found real interest for, you know, very serviceable pieces, very kind of helpful advice pieces, sort of myth debunking. There are kind of terrifyingly enormous amount of sort of fake news circulating on WhatsApp more than ever before. I don't know if you've noticed with your own friendship groups, but I've definitely noticed, you know, a friend of a friend works at this hospital and they recommend this. So we're working to kind of debunk a lot of that, speak to experts, do interviews and kind of see what people are looking for and answer those questions. People are also really enjoying reading about personal experiences in isolation, everything from relationships, which I know you discussed with Olivia Petter in our Millennial Love in the Time of Corona episode. And also, you know, we had a real spike of interest in terms of, you know, the health news. And now we're really seeing an increase in people wanting to read about really positive things, virtual experiences, exercise you can do at home, recipes and that kind of thing. So there's a lot that we can cover. You know, it's an unprecedented time, and as a result, there's a lot of lifestyle content that people are interested in.
Yes, that's really interesting, because talking about fake news and all the things being shared on WhatsApp, I'm certainly getting a lot of them. It makes you realise that, you know, as journalists, we're reading constantly, we're constantly across the latest advice. And actually, by the time, you know, I mean, I'm from Devon, by the time my friends in Devon have sort of been sent something, they perhaps haven't been as across the facts as we are. So it's a super important job to sort of debunk some of these worrying things going around. So what are you having to think about when you're commissioning writers during this crisis?
I think the main thing for us is being very, very responsible, making sure we've got comment on anything that's said. We don't go out with sort of, you know, this viral hack is the key way to, you know, cure all woes. We are very much avoiding any triggering language, being very careful of the type of images that we use in articles, nothing too scaremongery, that kind of thing. I think a lot of the job of a lifestyle journalist is sort of responding to and tapping into the zeitgeist. What are people, you know, even when you talk to your friends, I think quite different from many forms of journalism, a lot of my sort of ideas and content literally comes from chatting to friends or, you know, kind of brainstorming with the team. And we think, oh yeah, actually a lot of our friends have expressed concern about X, Y, Z, or have you noticed, you know, everyone's obsessed with the sort of Joe Wicks morning workout. And so we tend to respond to that as well. But I think really the key is avoiding that triggering language, avoiding scaremongering, and trying to balance the shade with some light wherever possible.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's enough frightening news out there. We don't need to be adding to that. So away from running your busy team remotely and all of the challenges that come with that, the outbreak has also meant your wedding this summer has been postponed. I know you were at work when you got the news.
Yeah, me as well as many others. Actually, it was really interesting. We were covering a lot of stories early on about people who whose wedding had been cancelled, about how to deal with wedding insurance, whether you had it, if you didn't have it, what you could do, what your rights were. And obviously, the whole time, this was in the back of my mind. My wedding was actually supposed to be at the beginning of June. And we have been planning it for a year. So, you know, as most people, planning wedding takes so much more time than you expect. And as much as I sort of initially started the process thinking, no, we won't do a big wedding, I'm not into weddings, I'm not into any of that cheese, we ended up with, you know, 90 strong guest list, and me sort of trying on white wedding dresses, which was exactly the opposite of what I had thought I was interested in. It was a real blow. It was a lot more sort of gutting than I would have previously thought. I think especially at the moment, you know, having a kind of light at the end of this sort of never-ending meandering tunnel is something that everyone's been looking forward to, whether that be a wedding or the London Marathon or Glastonbury. You know, everyone's had things cancelled, and of course there is much worse going on than any kind of cancelled events could ever be. But yeah, it was really upsetting. You know, we are still looking into our insurance. There's a lot of complications there. There's obviously a real kind of risk that, you know, as well as losing an event that we were so looking forward to, you know, our friends have booked plane tickets. We've had friends coming from Australia, Hong Kong, you know, Greece, Copenhagen, New York, LA, what have you. You know, we felt quite guilty about that. And we also felt really sad for the wedding suppliers. I think when you're planning a wedding, you work very closely with people for an event that is very personal. And you talk to people about your relationship. You know, day to day, you don't normally just go around having conversations with people about your relationship. And you speak to a lot of strangers about your relationship and how you'd like it to be portrayed in photographs, or what kind of speeches you would like from your kind of maid of honor and your best man and all that kind of thing. So there are so many people involved in the planning of a wedding. And for us, I think we also just felt really, really awful for the suppliers whose entire, you know, livelihoods and businesses depend on this season. Wedding season is now, it's just ramping up, and it looks like so much has been cancelled. So, you know, it was a very supportive cancellation that we're sort of going through. We're speaking to everyone, and we're trying to be as supportive of our suppliers as they are of us, and hoping to rearrange. But everything is just so uncertain, and we're definitely not alone in that sense. I think also a lot of people have been contacting, you know, their local council or their church saying, our wedding's been cancelled, but we really want to get married anyway. And I think during this time when things are so scary, you do actually think, you know, we do want to be married, and maybe the wedding element doesn't matter as much anymore and it's not possible, but we just want to kind of be each other's person in a sort of, in a sort of cheesy way, and sort of protect each other. And obviously, you know, since the lockdown, that's not possible either. And a lot of people have said, you know, you can only have weddings of 5 people in total. So yeah, disappointment for a lot of people, but in many, many more ways than just weddings, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about the all of the suppliers, as you say, a lot of them sort of do a very, very hard sort of 6 months busy season of the year and work, you know, all sorts of hours in order to get this annual money in. And yeah, thoughts obviously with them. Do you have any ideas about when you might reschedule, or is it all still up in the air?
You know, it's so difficult because I think because we have people coming from all over the world, that obviously affects things. We initially had, you know, like most people, really wanted a sort of summer wedding, and actually the dress that I ordered is very much a summer dress. So, and summer just doesn't seem like a realistic prospect anymore. I think we are just kind of hanging tight, speaking to insurers, and now sort of looking inwards at, you know, making sure our family is okay and everything before we look to do that. I would absolutely love to keep it all running, but it's just so uncertain at the moment.
Yeah, well, one thing's for sure, people are going to want a party by the time this is all over.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so before we leave, a reminder that you can get in touch with the podcast team here to ask questions or suggest future subjects for discussion. So please email the coronaviruspodcast@independent.co.uk. Alternatively, you can use the social media hashtag IndieCoronavirusPodcast. That's Indie with a Y. You can, of course, read all about the COVID-19 pandemic as it unfolds on our website, independent.co.uk. There's also a new email newsletter you can sign up to if you want the latest news and advice delivered to your inbox daily. There's more information on that on our website. Please remember to subscribe to this series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen, and leave us a rating and a comment too so more people can find us. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.